Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to coast, This Week in America. His Majesty's Airship, the life and tragic death of the world's largest flying machine by noted author and historian S.C. Gwynn, is a stunning historical tale of the rise and fall of the world's largest airship and the doomed love story between an ambitious British officer and a married Romanian princess at its heart. The tragic story of the British airship R-101, which went down in a spectacular hydrogen-fueled fireball in 1930, killing more people than died in the Hindenburg disaster 7 years later, has been largely forgotten, until now. In His Majesty's Airship, master storyteller S.C. Gwynn resurrects it in vivid detail, telling the epic story of great ambition gone terribly wrong, a rich tale of technology, daring, and folly. S.C. is the author of The Hymns of the Republic and the New York Times bestsellers Rebel Yell and The Empire of the Summer Moon, which was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize, National Book Critics Award Circle as well, spending a remarkable 82 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list. His book, The Perfect Pass, American Genius, and The Reinvention of Football was published in September 2016, was named to a number of top 10 sports book lists. He was with us on This Week in America to discuss that book. S.C. spent most of his career as a journalist, including stints with Time as bureau chief, national correspondent and senior editor, and with Texas Monthly as executive editor. He lives in Austin, Texas. We welcome back to This Week in America acclaimed author and historian S.C. Sam Gwynn, author of His Majesty's Airship, The Life and Tragic Death of the World's Largest Flying Machine. Sam, welcome to the program. It's a pleasure to have you back with us.
It is an honor and a pleasure to be talking to you.
What a great story that you tell here, and you make us think that we are right there as history is unfolding. We are there and actually watching this. Where did this idea come from? What inspired you to look into the story of this British airship and the tragic fate?
Well, I initially encountered the idea in a three-volume history of the British Empire, a book that nobody reads anymore, but it was just a couple of pages, and it just seemed like this. It was this story of this incredibly ambitious attempt to call the Imperial Airship Scheme to sort of fill the skies of the British Empire with giant airships, and it was this kind of empire-wide scheme that went south and somehow was all tied up in the decline of the British Empire. And I thought, well, and moreover, it was an airship crash, as you said, that was 7 years before the Hindenburg that nobody knows about anymore, but it was more lethal and it's a much better story. And I just the people have been forgotten, the crash has been forgotten, and I'm reviving it.
Well, you are, and doing so well. The book by S.C. Gwynn is His Majesty's Airship. We'll give you information. Book available basically wherever books are sold. And I love on Sam's website, which is scgwynn.com. You can click on Indie and find an independent bookstore in your area to purchase the book there. And we'll have all of this as we go through the conversation today. Talk about once you get this knowledge, like this sounds like a really interesting story. Well, then you have to go and do the research. What was the research like for His Majesty's Airship and the sources you relied upon? And were you surprised as you were looking into this?
Yeah, it was. So the sources, most of the source material, unfortunately, it's voluminous, is in the United Kingdom National Archives. That is in London. In a little place called Kew, about 7 miles southwest of the center of London. And, the United Kingdom Archives, that's where they have, King Arthur's pipe and slippers, Robin Hood's tights. Literally stuff going back to Roman times, though, and huge scrolls. And it's a wonderful place to go research. But I had some trouble early in COVID getting there because, COVID closed all libraries, collections, museums, everything, which are my bread and butter. So there was a period of time when I did some very aggressive workarounds trying to fix that. But I eventually got there, spent time in the archives, went to the RAF Museum, which was great, and some of the other museums and collections and libraries in England, and that was great. Went to a wonderful private archive up in Blackpool on the Northwest Shore. Anyway, I had a great month in England out of the deal, and that was a lot of fun. And I think that you know, what I'm writing about in the book as much as anything here is human folly. I mean,
yes.
Airships were invented in 1900 by Count Ferdinand von Zeppelin. We will know the name Zeppelin, right? And not just from the musical band. But, and they ended in 1939. And the reason was they were fundamentally flawed. Not that airplanes didn't crash all the time, too. Then they did, except that airplanes were fundamentally a good idea. And as time went by, they dominated. But there was a long time when people thought, you know, airships were going to be the long-range travel of the future. They seemed to make more sense. Planes were noisy and dangerous and required constant fueling. And so there's this kind of moment that I'm writing about in the early century that airplanes and airships, and we're talking about rigid airships, giant, you know, 500, 600, 700 foot long things full of hydrogen, which was incredibly dangerous.
Yes.
You know, which was these technologies that existed in the early century.
You know, it's fascinating. You got a chapter in that. It's a short one, and it's called The Brief History of a Bad Idea. And you would think after you read that chapter that nobody would try it again. And they did try it again with disastrous results. The book is His Majesty's Airship, The Life and Tragic Death of the World's Largest Flying Machine by S.C. Gwynne, G-W-Y-N-N-E. His website, scgwynne.com. All of this information on our website, This Week in America. .us. Let's talk about the cast of characters. You have several that are fascinating and flawed at various levels. Talk about the characters because they really make this story come alive.
Yeah, it's full of great characters.
Yes.
And the chief character is this guy named Lord Christopher Birdwood Thompson, and he was the Secretary of State for Air, which is a great title, I think. And he was, as such, in England, in post-war England, he was the guy that drove this, it was called the Imperial Airship Scheme. And I'll give you a little background on it. Coming out of World War One, Great Britain was already a pretty big empire back in the 19th century. But after World War One, it inherited big parts of the Ottoman Empire, the German Empire. After the war, the British held the largest empire the world had ever known, 25% of the globe, and a lot of it just connected. I mean, it was an extremely large expanse of real estate, and yet there were cracks in it. You know, you had the Boer War, and you had the Irish Rebellion, and you had this. India was seething, and we know what's going to happen with India eventually, and all these things were happening. And so in the 20s, sort of men of empire, looking for some new way to understand their far-flung empire, to strengthen it, to make it more powerful. They didn't have the military option they did before, but they came upon this idea that they would link this vast space together with these giant airships, and which still at that point seemed like a plausible way to go, that they would be better for that than airplanes would. And so Christopher Birdwood Thompson, Lord Thompson, who would 5 generations of the Raj in India, enormously influential military family. He came from there, was born in India. He fought in most of the theaters of war of for England in the early 20th century, early 1900s. And he was the driving force behind this idea, this scheme, and we're going to be airships literally floating through the skies of empire.
Yes.
And not only that, it was going to be British technology. You know, if you go back to the 19th century, you can understand a big part of British dominance. They ruled the waves, right? Why? Because they were the masters of the pounding piston, you know, built guns bigger than anybody else and ships bigger and engines bigger. And these guys, it was just based on this sort of technology. And so Britain was going to rule this new world, a peaceful world, through the air with their own technology. And this was the incredibly ambitious and doomed, as was Thompson himself, doomed ambition called the Imperial Airship Scheme.
With us on This Week in America, S.C. Gwynne. He's the author of the new book, His Majesty's Airship, The Life and Tragic Death of the World's Largest Flying Machine. You talk in the book about the technical limitations, the fatal flaws of these airships. Talk about overlooking that and thinking they could conquer all of those and going ahead with this project.
Yes, it's an early, you know, airship technology was in its infancy in the early 1900s, as were airplanes. They were competing. there was at one point where the German Zeppelins could stay aloft, you know, for 12 hours at a time when the Wright and carried 12 or 8 or 12 people aloft, while the Wright brothers were carrying one person aloft and doing 38 minutes. So there was these competing technologies. But as the decades move forward, airplanes got better and better, and airships did not. And there was they had some real problems, starting with hydrogen. They were filled with hydrogen. Hydrogen, if you touch a spark to it, goes boom. Everybody's seen that film of the Hindenburg.
Yes.
That's what it looks like when it happens. Now, you think, well, maybe that was the only time that happened. There were about 70 of those, most of them German Zeppelins during the war, but also American airships and Italian airships and French airships and British airships going up this way. So you have this huge flaw. Hydrogen, anything touches it at all in the way of a spark, which was, of course, learned by the British fighter pilots in World War I shooting down Zeppelin bombers over London. They figured out all you got to do is hit one with an incendiary bullet, and it goes up in a very satisfying video game-like way.
Yes.
But if that wasn't the only flaw, though, if you take the hero airship of my book is the R-101, which was, at the time, it flew the largest thing that had ever flown. It was 777 feet long, bigger than the Titanic by volume. It was really something. But it also had 6 acres of surface area. This doped cloth that covered the steel frame up there, you know, just think of what the Hindenburg looks like. And you got 6 acres. And if you've ever been in a little sailboat like a Sunfish, when a 20-mile-an-hour wind hits it, I mean, imagine what 6 acres does when you hit it with a 50-mile-an-hour wind.
Oh, yes.
They were enormously vulnerable to wind. They could not land in a storm because they would be beaten to death on the ground and then usually would blow up in a hydrogen fireball. They were extremely difficult to fly, difficult to navigate, subject to all kinds of things, temperature of the air, density of the air, humidity in the air. They were a very flawed idea. And as I said, airplanes were in the early going too, but those got better and better over the years. The airships never really solved them. And so when we look back at the era, we can say it started in 1900, ended in 1939, and that was it. And it's kind of a miracle that it went on for so long. And that, you know, in the early days of any technology, you can see it in hindsight maybe, but at the time you don't, the people are optimistic. They think it's going to work. You know, I mean, I personally wouldn't have gotten into an airplane in 1912, but there were people who would.
Yeah.
There were always people who were going to push forward, you know, with new technology, people who were brave, optimistic. And this drove the airship industry for as long as it lasted.
When you see the illustrations, the drawings, the layout, the luxury that people would be traveling in the airships, it would be rather tempting to think, okay, I could travel and that would be a pretty nice way to go. That it really was a sight to behold, wasn't it?
It was. It was not only big, but it was meant to be luxurious.
Yes.
And meant to offer this, you know, airplanes. It was a flight from somebody made in 1927 or 28 from London to Karachi in India. And it was 12 bone rattling days, you know, 26 stops for fuel, just a really difficult, arduous task. An airship can make it in 2 days with one stop. And so the vision of these things was they were going to be luxurious. They were going to look like an ocean liner. And R-101 did. Have an asbestos-lined smoking lounge, which is interesting in an airship with 5.5
yeah,
million cubic feet.
I had to read
hydrogen.
That twice to make sure I understood that correctly.
it was meant to have a promenade so you could look down as you floated serenely at an altitude of 1,500 feet, seeing deer run through the forests. I mean, and you know, while you were being served a mint julep or something, this was this grand vision of travel. It was going to be nice and luxurious and. It was not going to involve what it actually ended up involving by and large, which is death and fireballs and crashes.
Yeah, you get on board, you wouldn't expect an ashtray. It just seemed a little out of place there, but it's such a compelling story. Our guest on the program is S.C. Gwynne, G-W-Y-N-N-E, author of His Majesty's Airship. His website is scgwynne.com, book available, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, independent bookstores all across the country. Back with S.C. Gwynne after these messages. Stay tuned. You're listening to This Week in America. Our guest on the program today is S.C. Gwynn, author of the book His Majesty's Airship. Let's talk a little bit about what happened on that day. Let's lead up to that, because they had, a forerunner of the R-101, what had a tragic failure, a big explosion, knocked people down on the ground. Talk about that. The fact that they could have a problem wasn't a real surprise to them, was it?
No, as I said, there have been many German crashes. The Germans invented these things, the big rigid airships. Many crashes before World War One, all kinds of crashes during World War One, which where the Germans were launching Zeppelins as bombers against seven different cities in Europe. So there were. If you look back at it, you can see there were mainly crashes. It was an exception when they didn't crash. So in 1921, it was the British first attempt. Coming out of the war, the Germans led the world in technology. Everybody was years behind them. But after the war, they were for the Treaty of Versailles, where they were forbidden to build these things. So the British jump in now, and they're going to do the Germans one better. And they build this ship called the R-38, which is meant to be the kind of perfected Zeppelin, actually goes up at a giant hydrogen fireball and kills a whole generation of the airship establishment in Britain. And if you look at these years, you know, American airship Shenandoah goes down, the American airship Roma, the French airship Dixmude, there's just crash, 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 crash. And it was this kind of vaulting ambition of Lord Thompson and his fellows there to create a new technology that would basically, it rings like the Titanic. They were going to make this thing as safe as a house, as they said. It was going to be unsinkable, not unsinkable. It was going to be uncrashable like the Titanic. And I paint a picture of complete disaster. There were moments of glory here, and I'll tell you about one, because it's one of the characters in the book named Herbert Scott. And Herbert Scott, British after the war found themselves with a Zeppelin an airship that they had modeled from stolen basically from German Zeppelins that had no business flying across the Atlantic. But this guy, Herbert Scott, flew it across the Atlantic, first east to west crossing ever, turned around and flew it back, first double crossing of the Atlantic 8 years before Lindbergh. There were at least 10 times when the thing should have gone down. It was an act of incredible heroism. He was the greatest hero in the world at that point in 1919. A hero of aviation. And again, he's lost to history. He was the guy on R-101 when it departed for India that fateful night in October of 1930 that gave the no-go call into the storm. And he had, by that point, had become a drunk. Anyway, there's lots of interesting characters here. He's one of them. And yes, there was so much precedent for bad luck and bad results here that it's truly a wonder to me still that they pushed off on their, 10,000-mile round-trip journey that night.
Why did they? In reading, Thompson seems like a decent guy, naive, received a lot of bad information, and had a tight schedule, didn't he, part of this whole Imperial airship scheme that you had talked about?
Yes, he did. It was rushed. I mean, he wanted to, this is our Lord Thompson here, the guy running, what he wanted to do was, this is the Imperial airship scheme. In order to do what he wants to do, he's got to demonstrate it can be done. So he's going to take this R-101, the largest thing that's ever flown. They're going to fly it to India, 2 days down, turn around and fly it back. And he's going to, literally, this was his plan. He was going to get off the airship, trailing clouds of glory, motor his way into London, where the Imperial Conference was taking place, and show up on the dais and introduce the world to this new idea airships in the British Empire, yes, dominating the skies. And that was his plan. And so it was rushed in order to get there, to get back for the Imperial Conference. That was rushed. They never put it through the trials they should have. They didn't pay attention to their inspectors, who talked about these incredibly fragile 10-story gas bags made out of cattle intestines, or the exterior cloth that was just doped cloth that you could put your finger through. I mean, there were all sorts of – it was an enormously fragile thing, in addition to being sort of a strong thing in some ways. But anyway, this was the process of getting that thing to take off on October 4th. And as I say, it's still amazing that they tried, but they never made it. They made it about 7.5 hours, crossed the channel, and went down in a fireball that was just like the Hindenburgs in the early morning hours.
You know, it's interesting. You do a breakdown, basically minute by minute, of the flight and what went wrong. Was there any particular issue or just a compilation of things that worked against it?
Well, the book is sort of written where there's every other chapter you're on the boat.
I mean, yes.
You're not the boat, the airship, the boat, the Lusitania. It's as though you're on the Lusitania because you know what's going to happen, but you're on board the ship as it is heading on its 7-hour flight toward its doom. But yes, there was the main reason it went down is because, you know, I won't give all the details, is because the two most fragile pieces of it, the cover and the gas bags that were, again, made from cattle intestines — that sounds really unusual, but that's what it was —
yes,
failed. And these things had already failed before. They knew that they had failed, and a lot of that was suppressed. So there's a certain amount of incompetence. I mean, it's sort of a mixture in some ways of just unjustified optimism and incompetence. And if you call incompetence not paying attention to your chief inspector who says, don't do that.
You know, it's such an amazing story. A couple minutes left with S.C. Gwynn. Author of the book is Majesty's Airship, The Life and Tragic Death of the World's Largest Flying Machine. It was a few years later you had the Hindenburg, and we all know about that, but rarely does anyone know about His Majesty's Airship that you've written about that. Why is that, do you think? The fact that it was British and this was a disaster here in the United States?
There was a little bit of that, I think, at least as far as the United States goes. But I think it's been largely, a lot of it's been forgotten in Britain, too, which is very interesting, considering it was a huge national tragedy and overflow crowds of, you know, St. Paul's and Westminster cathedrals and a million people in the streets of Whitehall to watch the funeral cortege go by. It was an enormous tragedy for the nation. And so why is it forgotten? There's a couple of reasons. One, I think the Hindenburg, which is the only time anyone ever had on film what a rigid airship looked like when it went up in a fireball. I mean, that silent film was shown in movie theaters all over the world. It was the first great reality TV, you know, and it was married later to sound, married with sound by a British producer in the 1960s. And then you had not only the 30 seconds of the incredible fireball, but you had the voice going, "Oh, the humanity." And so everybody knows about it. And I think to some extent the Hindenburg kind of overwrote what happened before. I mean, to me, the Hindenburg is not as good a story. The main story about the Hindenburg is what made it go boom. R-101, to me, killed more people, but far better story. It was a story of kind of the decline of the British Empire. But I think to some extent, too, you know, the airship era ended in 1939. Forever. This technology had a 40-year life, and then it ended. And I think just the very fact that it went out of all, I mean, while airplanes went on to dominate the world, yeah, these things kind of just faded from memory, except, you know, you may see the Goodyear blimp or the Fuji blimp over a sporting event.
Yes.
Those aren't airships. Those aren't, I'm sorry, they are airships. They're not rigid airships. They're blimps. They're essentially envelopes filled with gas with maybe a rigid keel, but they're much smaller than the giants that roamed the earth in the early century.
What did we learn from R-101? Did it have any impact on aviation industry, the aviation future, advancements as well as safety measures?
There was a lot of things that they did that I won't go through now in the way of material science. Alloy science, you know, there were pumps, electrical systems, all sorts of things that were innovative and did continue. But the crash of the R-101 killed the British airship industry dead. That was it. It never went beyond that at all, and should have killed it, I think, globally, except the Americans had to have two more crashes after that, and then another crash. The Germans had to have the crash of the Hindenburg after that, and even then it didn't. The Germans still had one ship going, but it mostly just killed I was just basically just killed the airship industry. Yes. And that's what it did. And there wasn't any, I mean, there were other lessons. It's like, you know, pay less, more attention to your technology and less attention to nationalism and to national pride. Because to some extent, these big ships were all wrapped up in national pride. They were very huge national kind of hubris attached to them. They were so big and they were so technologically sophisticated and they didn't look like anything before. And there was this sense of national pride, first in Germany and then in the United States and Great Britain.
And you capture that, this emotion that was running through the people there, the pride they were taking and what they were seeing unfolding. Just to wrap up here, I'm looking online a few days ago, and I see this headline, The Second Age of Airships, designed for freight, not passengers. Cardington, England, which plays a role in His Majesty's airship, is apparently their
major role.
Yeah, they're building there, and they hope to have some up and flying by 2025. Is it viable today?
You know, the big ridges, the hydrogen-filled big ridges will never fly again. And I actually don't think a big ridge, meaning a huge steel or aluminum, you know, skeleton
yes.
with gas bags inside of it, we'll never see that again. They're impractical. You can't land in a storm, and they're too subject to wind. But some of these new, these are smaller, these
yes.
blimps. They're filled with helium. Which is not the panacea. American airships all had helium in them, all crashed. But yeah, there's some really interesting ideas. There's one called the Airlander that I just love. It's very aerodynamic. It's less subject to wind. It's, again, much smaller than these airships that we're talking about. But, you know, one of them, if somebody's got an idea to charge $500,000 and put people on the North Pole for fun, you know, tourists, which is great. There's some other things that, you know, where you can supply refugee camps and bring supplies in. And I mean, we can look up and, you know, you can see the Goodyear blimp and up there and, you know, at Wembley or wherever they are, I'm sorry, at, you know, Yankee Stadium or
yes.
something. You can fly a blimp and you cannot fly it in bad weather and you cannot fly it in a big wind and you cannot land it in a big wind. But there are applications for it, I think, and I think I like the tourist one. So if I ever have $500,000, you know, I'm extra lying around. You know, I'm going to get on one of those things and go to the North Pole.
That would be a nice trip to take. Unfortunately, we're out of time. Sam S.C. Gwynne is our guest on the program. G-W-Y-N-N-E, if you're Googling, his website, scgwynne.com. Book available at Amazon, barnesandnoble.com. Click and you'll find an independent bookstore in your neighborhood that you can order the book there as well. And the book is His Majesty's Airship, The Life and Tragic Death of the World's Largest Flying Machine. Sam, it is always a pleasure to have you on the program. Another 8 years. Let's do this again. Thank you for being with
Absolutely.
Us on the program.
Yeah, Rick, it was a great talk. Enjoyed it very much.
Thank you. Our guest on the program is S.C. Gwynne. Again, the book, His Majesty's Airship, information available on our website, thisweekinamerica.us, and Sam's website, scgwynne.com. More on This Week in America right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.